So we're in Hilchot Deot Perek Hey Halacha Vav really, and this really brings up a very, very difficult issue that has been in the news. It's not the first time that we've had this type of an issue, and it behooves us to bring it up. And this is the place to do it. Tzniut gdola. Noagim talmidei chachamim be'atzman. Someone who's a talmid chacham practices a very high level of modesty with themselves. Okay, it's just a way to be modest. Lo yitbazu v'lo yitgalu roshan v'lo gufan. They don't. I don't even know how to define this. They don't take liberties with themselves physically, even in private, right? Just don't do that. There's a certain way that you carry yourself in private that impacts the way you are in public. And it raises an interesting question, which I think actually relates to Purim, which is the par, how do you say par in English? The distance, difference between the private self and the public self. You know, Purim is all about masks. And really, the truth is that Purim, most people think that Purim is the day you put on the mask. It's not really true. Purim is the day you actually take off the mask. In fact, the custom to put a mask on basically sends a message that what you see is really a mask. And I want to hide what you see so that you can stop looking just at what you see and see beyond what you see. See what's inside. You know, I remember, we were once talking about here about wine, alcohol, some Friday night tish or something, I don't remember. Because we heard that other yeshivot, you know, sometimes have alcohol tishes. And so we got into this discussion, you know, we were having a tish, and talked about drinking. And I said, you know, the Gemara says, Da'at Adam Bakoso Bakiso Bakaso, you learn at a person from his anger, from his pocket, you know, how he is with his money, and Bakoso when he drinks. And the Gemara says, you know, Nichas Yain Yotze Sod, you know, you learn about a person. Because when a person drinks, what's inside of them comes out. And I vividly remember, you know, Rav Lichtenstein, Maharash Yeshiva, he never gets drunk. Even he doesn't like wine. He's a very straight-laced person, to put it mildly. And even at Havdalah, it's known in the yeshiva that when he makes Havdalah, because the two Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Avital and Lichtenstein, and 1 week one made Havdalah, 1 week the other. So he would make Havdalah, so he would take a sip, right? And it's really a lacha, you're supposed to drink a revius, you're supposed to drink 4.4 fluid ounces. So one of the yeshiva bachrim right away would grab it and drink a revius, you know, some tzaddik, right? He would never get drunk. And I remember the first year on Purim, and I'd never been in a Purim like that before, and they have like Kush Purim, and then we would all go to Yerushalayim, we would go to, you know, spend a little time with the Vluchsi, whatever, and then to Rav Amital's house, two very different experiences, right? And because we would always go to Rav Lichtenstein first, and guys had a little drink, but nobody was really tipsy, and, you know, it was very sort of, you know, very proper. You know, we'd get in a circle, we would dance, he would be a little bit tipsy, not really tipsy, but at the Masiba, right, he would, get serious, you know, Adalo Yada, he wanted to be Yotze, all the Shitos. And the Rambam basically says that you drink until you're tired so that you could lie down and close your eyes and fall asleep. And that's one way to make sure Adlo Yada. And there are definitely other poskim and rishonim who say that you actually should get to the point where you're, there's a certain amount of confusion, right? And why do you do that? Because, and by the way, just as an aside, I don't know. I really don't know. A number of gdolim have come out and say that today's youth actually should not drink on Purim. There are all sorts of things going on. You know, with alcohol, banning kiddush clubs, and all this sort of stuff. But the most important line, bar none, the most important detail of drinking on Purim, if you ask me, everything else is just perush, is you have to know who you are. And this story is the example for that, although it's not where I'm going. Rav Lichtenstein, he got drunk. I mean, drunk. And they helped him into a chair. He was sitting on a chair, and all the guys were dancing, and so they're dancing around him, right? And he was like yelling. He was like mumbling, yelling, whatever. And so I went close. Like a few of us were going, we were trying to hear what he was saying, right? He was quoting Shitos. Okay, he sounded something like this. Avyon, Chagiga, Tauslaus, now! Avyon, now! Right? And I realized he was just spewing Torah. And no, we couldn't understand what he was saying. And one bacher came over to him and started to ask him, like, I don't know, whatever he's going to ask him, do you need help or something like that? And he puts his arm around him and he starts giving him a shiur, right? And you know, we finished the dancing, we were sitting down, and the two of them were still sitting there. And 2 hours later, he was still spewing. He had so much Torah in him, right, that once you got him started and once the walls came down, that's what came out. Person like that, who never gets drink 364 days a year, on Purim, you find out who he is. And he discovers a little more who he is. So you have to ask yourself who you really are. And, you know, some people, they have a chance to find out who they really are when they drink before Purim. And if what comes out when you drink is not so pretty, then you shouldn't drink. That's clear, right? But it raises this question, how do you deal with that balance? There is a little bit of a disparity between the public and the private. And one of the things I actually like about this place, one of the things I fell in love with when I first came to Israelite, and one of the things I love about the Rebbeim here, is people here, for the most part, are real. You know, like Rav Sam, Rav Noam, who you see, that's who they are. They don't. There's no mask. They don't hide themselves. But because there's a difference in how you conduct yourself in public and how you conduct yourself in private. How does a person get to a space where the public persona is so different from what goes on in private? How do you deal with that? How do you deal with the fact that you have talmidim, you have students who, and you know, it's easy to say, oh, well, if a person could do those things, you know, terrible things in private. And by the way, just to be clear, I agree with Rav Drukman on this topic, not that he needs my approbation. When you discuss this topic, nobody should misinterpret this in any way, shape, or form to be a judgment call of a Talmud Chacham. You know, the Gemara says, the greater your Yetzer, the greater your Yetzer. And what that means is that when you see a person with a tremendous Yetzer Tov, it also means he has a tremendous Yetzer Ra. He has much more work to control his Yetzer Hara. When you look at a person like the Vilna Gaon, and you realize what he was able to do with the Yetzer Tov, you also have to understand how much battle he had to do with his Yetzer Ra. Right? Because they're the same energy, just channeled in different directions. And everybody has their demons, and everybody has their challenges, and everybody has their struggles, and everybody makes mistakes. You know, it's like last year at some point there was a boy, doesn't matter, whatever, and he was struggling with smoking, whatever, and for a while he succeeded, and then he didn't, whatever. And so one of the Rebbeim came over to me, or somebody came over to me and said, you know, I think you should give a shmooze about smoking, because really most of the guys don't smoke, but there's one boy, and there's a boy who came, whatever. I said, I can't give a shmooze about smoking. I said, why not? I said, because when I was in the army, I smoked. So forget about, like, you know, how and what. You know, pardon?
If you have the experience, is that a more?
No. I think personally, this is a different topic. I'm not going to go there. But I think personally, one of the things that it's healthy to learn in life is that when you deal with an addictive substance, and we've definitely had this discussion before, you know, some people try something. Like, I've met people, kids, whatever, they try a cigarette here or there, and they never become addicted because they never do it enough. You could do that. It happens. Most people do not succeed. But if you become addicted to something, you're an addict for life. That is what all the systems say. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous says. That's what Narcotics Anonymous says. All these systems. And they're right. You know, I'm a coffee addict. And you could make a debate whether that's healthy, not healthy, pros, cons. I don't think it's as bad as cigarettes, obviously. But, you know, you'll be a coffee addict for life. And you're a nicotine addict for life. And just the fact that I don't do that way. I don't smoke 2 packs a day like I was when I was in Lebanon. And you could justify it from here, ad hodah chadasha. You know, you're in Lebanon, you're getting shot at, everybody in your unit is smoking. I could give you all the justifications in the world, it doesn't matter. People weren't aware of it then like they are now, it doesn't matter. For me to give a musar shmuz about something that I struggled with, and I'm sure will struggle with for the rest of my life, I just didn't think it was appropriate. That was me. It doesn't matter whether I'm right or wrong. However, one second. However, I make the point because you shouldn't misinterpret that we have the right to judge an individual. As an individual, people make mistakes. And you have a responsibility to judge the action. And it goes without saying that the actions that have been in the press of this particular Rav and what's going on is horrendous. And I give tremendous credit. You know, there are a lot of different Jewish communities. I don't know another Jewish community that does something like this to this extent. You know, you have to see the positive in every community. The national religious, what if you want to call it the Tilumi, sort of, I don't know if I'd call it modern Orthodox. It's a tough label to come up with, but it's closest to modern Orthodox in America. Basically realized that they had to expose truth. And certainly there were mistakes that were made. They didn't do it because they were caught. They didn't do it because the media found them. And they didn't do it because the police found them. They did it because it was the right thing to do. That you have to give kudos to. That's impressive. Having said that, it raises the question. So if such a Torah scholar, I mean, don't think that because a person falls to the Eitz Ahara, that means they weren't a Talmud Chacham. Rav Elisha ben Avuya was on the Sanhedrin. Do you know what you have to be on the Sanhedrin? He was the Rebbe of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir, it says, Stam Mishnah Rabbi Meir. Whenever you read a Mishnah and you don't know who the author is, that's Rabbi Meir. This was his Rebbe. Became an Apikoros. Became basically, you know, living in Greek land and wherever else it was, right? So you don't judge the individual. It's not for us to judge the individual and how a person falls, but you can judge the action. How does that happen? How does that happen? How does that disparity occur? I think what the Rambam is saying is that you can't just have moderation when it looks good. You can't just have moderation in the public. You can't just have, you have to struggle to practice moderation in everything. You have to practice sneer. It goes without saying that a person wouldn't, on his way here, have to go to the bathroom and relieve himself in the middle of the Churva Square, right? But how a person relieves himself when he's on a tiyul and no one's around and it's private, right? That has an impact on him. And that impact on him carries over into the public. Does that make sense? Right? Okay? By the way, just as an aside, although I think that this age group is probably beyond this, but you're at the verge of being at the next stage, I will tell you two things that are very worthwhile to be aware of. One is, you know, we live in a different generation. The generations are changing. And our sensitivity to these topics has to be a much higher level of sensitivity than existed 10, 20 years ago. You know, when I first was working in summer camps, and you had like a 10-year-old kid from Ada, one of the younger Edot, one of the younger bunks, and he was crying because he missed his mommy. So you would call him over and you would sit him on your lap and you talk to him and you give him a hug and you make him feel better. Can't do that today. Can't put a kid on your lap. Can't give a kid a hug. As sad and as tragic as that is, and as much as of a price as we pay for that, and we do pay a price for that, right? The fact that a person has to be careful once they wear a kippah on their head. I mean, I think any person, but I'm just speaking now from the perspective of the community that identifies itself Jewishly, has enormous implications and enormous responsibilities, and I think it's true here. I think it's true as a staff member. You know, there are certain things. I remember when I was teaching in Camp Moshava, and there was a girl, she was actually a sports staff or art staff or something, I don't remember, and she was going through a very difficult time, and I think she had some certain challenges socially also. Anyway, we got into this very deep discussion. She wanted to talk to me. It turned out that she was struggling with her own sexual orientation. She was having a very difficult time. And we're sitting in this office building in the middle of Camp Moshava and I.O., and we're sitting inside sort of one of the offices there. And, you know, people are still awake. It's like 1 o'clock in the morning. There's a photostat machine. The lights are on. Sometimes a madrich will come in and out to, like, prepare their pula for the next day, whatever it is. And, you know, it gets into a serious conversation, and, like, her tears are welling up in her eyes, and she's going through a very difficult sicha. And at one point she says to me, would you mind if I close the door? Like, you know, people are walking around outside. I said, yeah, actually, I would. I said, it's nothing personal, but I don't think it's appropriate for it, you know. And I took a little two-minute tangent at the Lachos of Yichud. I said, but, you know, if you really feel like you want a more private conversation, we can go for a walk. We'll walk around the public. Nobody will listen to us, whatever. So that's what we did. What? Like, I mean, Baruch Hashem, I'm happily married. Like, there's some danger that something's going to happen. By the way, halachically, I could have closed the door. As long as the door isn't locked and somebody could walk in at any time, halachically, you close the door. Why don't you do that? Because you take that extra mile, so that no one would ever think, and there shouldn't ever be the risk of anybody thinking anything inappropriate, etc., etc., etc. So you have to be aware of those things in terms of that balance. Yeah.
Is Yichud, I'm asking a halachic question, is Yichud itself a gezer, or is it its own halachic?
The Rambam says that these halachot are actually a doraita, some of them, because it says, lo tikruvun legalot erva. One should not come close to uncovering sexuality. So when it comes to what people like to refer to as negia, the Rambam believes that's a daraisa. Now, when that applies and who that applies to, etc., you know, and which Rishonim and Achronim, that's an interesting question. I think, by the way, on this topic, and, you know, if you guys want to have a discussion about these topics, I'm happy to do it. But on this topic, I think it's also, there's two issues. One is dalif nemiyata omeid. You have to know before whom you stand. Like the awareness of who we are and what we could be in this world. And the other is you have to know who you are. Different people are at different spaces. And it's always healthy to push your comfort level to a certain degree. But sometimes pushing your comfort level too hard is not healthy. So that's a question. But within the realm of halacha, there is range. That's A. B is the halacha of yichud. There, I mean, look, you know already, I love halacha, and I think halacha is magnificent, and I think the system that halacha created is incredible. And the sociological, psychological underpinnings of what halacha does are brilliant very often. And yichud is a great example. You know, I'll give you one example, and then we'll get back to this. I remember when I was living in the Kollel in Gush. So we lived in an apartment building. And they were like, you know, I don't know, 6-7 couples, and we were really on top of each other. Like, they didn't really design the buildings well in terms of tzniut. Like, one person's bedroom would sometimes face another person's kitchen. There was like a little whatever. So people had curtains or whatever. And you know, like, your apartment could be like the size of this space, and then you would walk up 6 steps, and there was another apartment there, the same thing. So sometimes you'd be 10, 10:30 at night. You know, I'd be home. I was learning for smicha. And one of the neighbors, you know, the wives got very close because, you know, and we had like, I think, you know, Tom was born the second year we were in Kollel there. And so we had 2 kids. And whenever one of the neighbor's wives would come up, you know, we were all young couples, to borrow something or whatever. So if Dorit would answer the door, right? So she would come in and they would schmooze, and then she would get her sugar or whatever she was looking for. When I would answer the door, even if Dorit was in the back room or if Dorit was asleep in the back room, whatever, I started to notice they would never come in. Now, there's no halacha. There's no halachic problem, you know, of somebody's wife coming into your apartment when your wife is asleep in the back, right? And the door is wide open. But there was a certain sense of being careful about what is appropriate to the extreme, which was very healthy. And I have to tell you, in my circles of friends, and I have, Baruch Hashem, lots and lots of friends, you know, I suppose there are things you don't know about, but I never heard of a guy in my circles having an affair. I never heard of a marriage breaking up and those types of things, because it never goes there. Like, there's a couple that my wife and I are very close with, we're very friendly with, and the wife, she and I, like, we were sort of, you know, we went out a little bit way back when I was in high school. I would never ask her out for a cup of coffee. It wouldn't occur to me to do that. Like, for me to go out with someone else's wife with a cup of coffee. Even though, la-lacha, if I had to have a business meeting with somebody, you could do that. There's a certain sense of the appropriate, and yichud is the example of that par excellence. What Chazal are basically saying is, it's just not appropriate for you to have some sales representative who needs to talk to you about a product, and you're on a business trip, and invite her up to your hotel room, you know, because you have a conference table in your room or whatever. It's just not appropriate. So those limits, right? But that's really what this halacha gets into. I think that when the disparity, when the distance between the private and the public becomes too great, that's when things get warped. That's when things are off. And that's what a person has to be careful with. And by the way, that is really what's going on in the Megillah, when you think about it to some degree. And it's certainly what Purim is about to some degree. Because what's going on in public and what's going on in private, in terms of like a Achashverosh, Nima Melech Tov, is part of the issue there. So, Tzniut Gdola, Noagim Talmid HaChacham Batzmam. They practice tremendous modesty in themselves. Lo Yitbazuv, Lo Yitgalu Roshan, Velo Gufan. Right? They don't. You won't find a Rav Lichtenstein, you know, playing basketball, you know, and being on the skins team with his shirt off. You just won't find that. Even though you would not be able to find a halacha that says that that's problematic. You just wouldn't find that. There's a degree of modesty, right? If you ever go into tiyul and you're, you know, technically, halachically, if two fellows want to relieve themselves and they're both standing at the trees, there's no halachic issue necessarily, right? But there's a modesty that a person carries themselves with, right? Ukshehu misaperi ma lo yisaper bit. Oh, no, I did the wrong way. Sorry. Right? Ve'afilu b'shashi kanesh l'beit ha'kisei yetzanua. Even when you're in the bathroom, you practice tzniut, modesty. Ve'lo yegaleh b'gadav ad she'eshev, and you don't reveal yourself until you sit down. You don't ve'lo yikanech b'yamin. That's actually a Kabbalistic idea. You don't use your right hand because right represents a yamin tzidkecha and represents chesed, etc. V'itrachek mikol adam, person should be distant. Like the whole idea, we talked about this once, the whole idea of the urinals and standing next to each other, it's a problem. It's not so appropriate. And if you can be in a stall, it's a healthier thing to do. V'ikanes cheder lifni micheder, me'ara lifni min ha'me'ara v'nifne. Right? You don't relieve yourself in public in front of everybody. V'im nifne achorei ha'gader, yitrachek kedei shelo yishma chavero kolo im nitatesh. You should be far enough away from people that they can't hear you when you're relieving yourself. It's just modesty. Right? You ever go to someone's house and you have to go to the bathroom and it happens to be that their bathroom is right near the dining room. And it's embarrassing. Right? Why is it embarrassing? Because that's such a physical part of who we are. And you don't really want to share that part of yourself with someone else. And if you relieve yourself sort of out in the valley, like a bashetach, right? So you obviously have to distance yourself, and you don't talk when you're relieving yourself. Even for a very great need. Like if you knock on the bathroom, and one of the rabbanim is in the bathroom, they won't say, I'm in here. They'll say, uh-huh. Because you don't want to talk. Words are have kedusha to them. They're there. And the way that you practice modesty when you're in the bathroom, that's how you practice it at night. It's a good thing, like in those days, when people worked out in the fields and stuff, so if you had to go to the bathroom, you had to walk quite a distance to go away to be relieving yourself. And therefore, they would have a custom to try to relieve yourself in the morning and the evening. I'm not sure you need to do that today. In fact, I don't, you know, there are sort of discussions about whether that's healthy or not. Let's stop here because we're running a little late.
What about the balance between also that you need to go to the bathroom? You know, because it's in a day or the whole day
you're
going to the bathroom, correct?
Yeah, I would say it's an avera to hold it in when you have to go to the bathroom. I would say that there are certain activities that one is not supposed to do when one has to go to the bathroom, like davening. Like if you're in the middle of davening, okay, there's a big question about kvod tzibur, right? For example, let's say you get called to an aliyah. You're standing at the Sefer Torah, the whole tzibur is waiting, and you suddenly realize you have to go to the bathroom. In a situation like that, the halacha says if you can hold it in and it's not extreme, then you should hold it in. But if you're about to daven Shemoneh Esrei, the silent Shemoneh Esrei, and you suddenly realize you have to go to the bathroom, then you go to the bathroom. You have to take off your tefillin, it's a pain, whatever. That's what you do. That's why many people will go to the bathroom before they daven, because they don't want to have to take off. Well, no, Rabbi Aaron goes a stage further. Rabbi Aaron, which is a Kabbalistic idea, is the idea that you want to remove any psolet from yourself. You want to relieve any waste, that which the body doesn't need is waste, and it relates to tumah, it's dead inside of you, and therefore you want to remove it before you attempt to elevate yourself. And that's why, like, if you're out on a field trip with Rabbi Aaron and you have to daven mincha, right? He'll disappear. Where does he disappear? He goes to the bathroom. Even though he just went to the bathroom, he tries to relieve himself. That's a very high level to do that, you know. And it's and he'll always say, like, don't wait for me, because he doesn't want to keep you waiting for davening. But whatever. But that's a difference. It's not an avera. It's just a good thing to do, you know. Okay, let's stop here.